Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. I was a little risky with this title. It's typically not a good idea to insult an artist who ends up drawing your face occasionally, but taking my chances. I've got Top Lobster on the other end. How you doing tonight, man?
Well. We meet again, Mr. Reed. I'm doing well. I'm doing What's going on with you, brother? It's good to talk to you face to face.
Yeah, no, it's great. I haven't seen your face since Florida because we tried to do a Zoom call for some business stuff the other night, but as usual, I'm on the road and had bad service, so couldn't make it. But yeah, I'm doing good, man. I'm in Nevada, going into Vegas tomorrow to pick up an excavator. And see, I move like big stuff that goes over 80,000 pounds. I know this is kind of a foreign idea, but like heavy, like complicated shit. I don't know. That's just kind of what I do. So.
Oh, is that what you? I didn't notice from your Twitter feed. I thought you just hated Israel, but you do other things.
I do other things that hate Israel. So I was thinking, when did our fake feud start anyway? I can't remember how that first came into being.
Is it fake? I think
Well, I don't know.
it started so yeah, I think maybe the first time I drew you for Josh's show, because I didn't really know you too well when you were going to be on, so I kind of just did a little I did a drawing of you, but I remember Josh. I remember maybe I asked him to say that I'm the number one truck driver in the Liberty
Oh yeah,
Movement.
that
That
must be
might have
it.
caught you by surprise. Usually the truth does hurt, especially people that were like coming from, I don't know, like some kind of like a left wing liberty kind of place. Like when you start telling them the truth, they get a little offended. So
That's
I think that's how it started.
great. Yeah, actually, I think the way I remember it starting was Josh actually put out a tweet saying that I was the best Liberty truck driver. And then I think
Oh.
you actually said, "Hey, Josh, that's not cool." So then he introduced me as the second best. That's how I remember it playing out, at least. So,
Yeah, he gets confused sometimes, so I had to turn him around. Yeah, but I don't know how, I don't even know how we're even considered when we got guys like Quincy out there, because that guy's just eating ass at the Dollar General. There's really no comparison.
yeah, I mean. Truck driving skills aside, like there just is no better Liberty trucker than Quincy, I think. I think he just kind of wins hands down by personality. I mean, even if he's getting in accidents every day, I don't know how good his trucking is, never ridden alongside him, but I think he just wins based off of that, you know?
Yeah, he seems like he drives like a general freight stuff, right? Like kind of supermarket things or dry goods and actually stuff that matters. So for those of that don't know what me and Reed do, I work I drive a truck locally and I move like material equipment, construction equipment around, and the occasional I'll do the occasional low boy move, whereas Reed is moving things that look like they might, take flight on the back of his truck. So I got to tell you, man, I'm impressed sometimes. I show my supervisors. I'm like, yo, this is my boy out there in Utah. Like this is when you were pulling that what was that, like a dumpster? It's like 20 feet on
Dump
each
truck
side or
bed.
something.
Yeah, dump truck bed for a mining truck.
Jesus Christ, I can't even imagine what they're doing with that. But yeah, that was an amazing haul. So
Yeah, but
you
see, if
could.
you came out here to Utah and you saw like how wide open everything is compared to Manhattan, I mean, like you couldn't move the type of stuff I do where you live. I mean, no matter what, you'd hit every bridge and you'd be taking telephone poles out. I mean, it's just it is a different, like, I think what you do in a lot of ways, honestly, is probably more difficult because everything is, still 1800s and 1700s construction, and they never really upgraded. All the roads there suck. And I mean, I drove in Boston a little bit when I lived in New Hampshire, and that was just retarded. I mean, it was designed for
Yeah.
horse and buggy, and you're trying to get a 53-foot trailer down the road. And I don't know. Out here, everything was built later. It just makes more sense. The bridges are taller, higher weight tolerances. The roads are wider, so you can haul more impressive looking shit. And I'm giving you a secret there that I'm not actually as amazing as I look. So.
No, you're not giving me, I know the deal, but yeah, New York is designed, it is designed for like horse and buggy. Like a lot of the yards that I'll pull into to pick up or drop off material or like different kinds of metal and shit like that. I mean, you've got maybe a foot or 6 inches on each side backing into a bay or an area, or if you're getting loaded, you're getting loaded on a busy street and you really have to be creative with how you're moving. It's a different type of driving. Whereas, are you worried, like, you know, the Tesla trucks that are doing their own driving kind of replacing you?
See, I've thought about that, like, especially what you do, they won't be replacing it for a long time. But I think also what I do specifically, it'll be a long time too. I think the people who should be worried about that are the ones who are just running freight between San Antonio and Tucson on I-10. You know, like if it's just a flat, dry, you know, sunny area where you don't have to worry about snow, you don't have to chain up your tires, the type of loads you're moving, you don't have to worry about anything coming loose. But once you get into anything complicated at all, it won't make statistical sense to get rid of the drivers for a long time, I don't think. Like, I mean, I think, you know, we might start seeing autopilot type stuff in the coming years, but you'll still have a driver. So basically you get out on the interstate and then you can kind of just chill out and let the truck do its work. And then if things get crazy, you have to take over again. I can see that type of thing coming soon. But as far as like completely removing the driver, especially if you're a delivery driver in a city, it just doesn't really make any sense. Like when Andrew Yang was talking about that in 2019 and 2020, and you hear politicians talking about it, I don't think they ever think about the logistics of, you know, if you blow a tire, or if your load starts coming loose, or you get into some really shitty weather. I mean, there's just so many variables that it wouldn't make sense to completely remove the driver.
Yeah, and the obstacles are constantly changing in a city, or like if you're carrying that kind of big load, it'll be much harder to account for whatever is sticking out on each side. Yeah, it's a tough. I mean, Andrew Yang is he's probably doesn't even drive a car, so these people that seems to be the case with most legislators. Like they're constantly talking about or writing legislation about things that they have no idea about. Which is, actually, maybe I'll segue it into what I'm doing now with the merch and all this stuff and, you know, the business that we were discussing. But because of Joe Biden's mandate, or under the Biden administration, where the IRS wants to now look at all the income that you make that's over $600, one of the sites that I use called Etsy, it's like a, I don't know, it's like kind of like a boutique site, but you can sell print on demand stuff there. They just said, hey, heads up, you have to, you know, we have to register with them with our tax ID, and they're going to be very stringent on it because they're coming down on them. So they have to come down on the users, which is quite the hassle, you know? I mean, yeah, before I, like, you know, I wasn't making 600, but now I do sell way more than $600 on there. So I'm like, it's almost discouraging to even, you know, do that. Cause now on top of the skills that I've acquired, like to draw and then the back end side to do the selling and the website, now I have to be a tax man too. I don't have much interest in that. So yeah, it's another case of legislators, like, you know, AOC, who you want to, they say they want to make laws to tax the rich or affect the rich, but really it's coming down on, you know, people like me. So it's just unintended consequences, unintended. Yeah, it's just more people have no idea what they're doing. And this is how we're living these days.
Yeah. I mean, you see that with everything, the legislators like writing rules that look good on paper, or they sound like, some of them don't even look good on paper, to be honest, but some of them do, and they try to frame it as though it's to help the little guy, to help the working man. But almost all of these things, when you see them put into practice, they suck. Like even safety regulations, you know, those sound like they're great for the average guy, but you know how ridiculous it's getting and how it makes it harder for small companies to keep up, and how they have to buy all this stuff for you and they have to adhere to all these dumb regulations they didn't have to before. And it actually crushes small business and makes you have to work for a bigger company. And like with you, they're fucking over your, you know, your side gig. And I don't know, like I'm one of those guys that work actually turned me into more of a libertarian. It wasn't so much reading books. It was actually just being out there on the job site and seeing how much the government screwed everything up. And if it wasn't the government, it was bureaucracy and big companies, which is similar to government, because once a company gets so big that there's no competition, that it can't fail, and you know, it has all these guaranteed incomes if it's a utility company or something. It's basically like the government. And when it was this top down structure of, you know, organization, everything would just fall apart and everything sucked and everything was a mess. And you'd see all these smaller companies get eaten up by these bigger companies. And I don't know, that's kind of what woke me up to it. Is it similar with you, or was it reading books that brought you there?
Yeah, it was definitely the work site. Maybe the mentality of that of a construction worker, I think, would naturally bring you towards more of a right wing view of life, because you're dealing with hard truths. Like when I was doing the railroad, you can swing a sledgehammer and you hit metal, and metal on metal, that's just the truth. There's no way around it. That is physical reality. And you kind of have to deal with that. You deal with the danger. So I think my mindset was there a lot. And then, then you start to notice a lot of the rules around OSHA, especially like asbestos abatement, it's hearing protect, all this kind of insanity that will, I mean, I can get in real trouble if I'm caught. I mean, just maybe if I take my helmet off, or if I'm not wearing certain PPE during a certain time, because OSHA, you know, an OSHA the person might be roaming around on a huge job. So that started to radicalize me a little bit there. And then obviously, you know, the story, you run into maybe like a Jordan Peterson type, and then that leads you all the way to Dave Smith. And then your mind is, once you get to Dave Smith, then you understand why everything is bullshit. Everything else, you're just kind of flirting around the edges with about, you know, what's going on here. So for sure, this, a construction field does lead you into that direction. And then the truck driving gig really solidified me in this direction, because now I have tons of free time to listen. So it depends on what I put in my ears. I could, you know, I could listen to music, you know, or I could put on the Naturalist Capitalist. And on any given day, there can be somebody super interesting, like the number one truck driver in the Liberty Movement, just spitting some fire knowledge on you guys, you know? But yeah, to answer your question, for sure, the job really did radicalize me into this path that I'm on now.
Yeah, I mean, the job aspect really made me realize that it's not about safety, it's about compliance. Because sometimes they would make your job more dangerous just to follow a rule. I mean, you have to wear a harness when you're 4 feet off the ground, when your lanyard is clipped in, where you'll still hit the ground if you fall. So all it does is create a tripping hazard and make you, you know, more clumsy and harder to move around. I remember one time I was on a job site and we were picking up this big shipping container. So I was standing on top of the shipping container, hooking the chains up to the crane. And, you know, it was an 8 foot wide, 20 foot long, 8 foot tall shipping container. So this safety officer came across the yard screaming like, "You can't do that. You need a harness." And so the only places I could hook in were the corners of the container. And, you know, my harness had a 5 foot lanyard on it, so I wouldn't even be able to reach the middle of the, of the shipping container to hook up the chains. But then on top of that, if I fell off the shipping container, you know, the lanyard attached like right here on your back, and it's 5 feet long, so you're still going to hit the ground. It'll keep you from rolling, I guess. But then they eventually said, like, okay, you just can't stand up there. You could use a step ladder, though. Like, just pick up, you know, go up on the top of the step ladder on each corner. And we ended up doing that, and it was way more dangerous. Now I'm standing on a rickety step ladder on uneven ground. And by the time this had all been done, I would have had that thing hooked up and ready to go and gotten off of it. But it was just because I wasn't following the right rule. They had to step in and make me do something else. Do you have a story like that where you were just like, what the hell? Like, what? this does not make my job easier or safer and more environmentally friendly or whatever they want to tell you. It's just about compliance.
Dude, literally on the railroad, literally everything you do can kill you and is dangerous. And there's constantly people around telling you, you know, well, you have to adhere to this, really got to do this. But so let's say, this has happened a number of times. you have to fasten some clips on the third rail side, which is in between the third rail and the running rail, but the clips are right in between there. And third rail is live oftentimes.
I really didn't want to touch any third rails in this episode. You
know, we're not going to talk about the Jews. Where's Ryan Dawson? So yeah, I mean, there's 100 rules that they want you to adhere to before you could start putting those clips in. But honestly, it would be a lot safer if you kind of just did it carefully. The rest of the rules might, I mean, you're going to have to test it. You're going to have to put mats over it. You're going to be actually almost physically touching the third rail most of the time. And it just, it's redundant. It doesn't make any sense. Like if you're using, like you said, the thing you reminded me of, if you're using the crane, like they want this, the same deal. We'll be picking up like entire panels. And sometimes I have to climb like 20, 25 feet up to hook them up. And they're like, well, we want you on a harness, but it just doesn't make any sense. It makes me like clumsy. It makes me off balance most of the time. Cause I do feel like a weird tug. So we just go up there and we do it, and hopefully nobody catches us. And if they do, I don't know. I think a big issue with today's world is well, Jordan Peterson talks about the archetypal mother, where she's kind of like in control of everything that's going on, like the order spectrum. And in today's day and age, people feel like there needs to be a lot of order, but some things you just can't micromanage. And they're doing their best to micromanage just about everything we do. And it's, you know, I think we're seeing the backlash of that now, and the crumbling of that, the rebellion against that archetypal mother that maybe shouldn't be in the construction field just right now. Let us handle it. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been a big fan of Mike Rowe for several years now. And he did this great little video I saw once called Safety Third. And he was explaining that safety can't be first, because if safety is first, then you won't do anything. Because like your job you're describing, everything will kill you. I had a job like that too. I used to work on power lines. Everything will kill you. Mm-hmm. So if safety was the most important thing, none of us would show up, because we'd be like, nope, you know, I'm not going to risk my life doing this. Obviously, money is more important than safety. And then obviously, doing a good job is more important than safety, because it would be easy to do the job really shittily, like set the pole 20 feet outside the wires. That's a lot safer than weaving it up in between them and setting it in a hole. But you do the right thing. You set the pole where it has to go, because that's more important than safety. Like, safety is obviously not even close to being the actually most important thing. And if you actually start focusing on safety more than getting the job done, then it actually creates complacency. So if you've got like this huge checklist of things you've got to do, you end up caring more about the checklist than actually thinking about what you're doing. So if there's a very real danger there, your mind is going to be constantly aware of it. You know, like if the new regulations with line work, you have to put rubber hose on the lines the entirety of anywhere that your boom or any of your tools could reach accidentally. So now you've got this rubber shield just up there that completely protects you from anything. And then you're going to make sure your truck is grounded, or, and you've got the switching orders, and you've got like all this crap, bang, 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 right in a row. When back in the day, you used to kind of just like go at it and get your work done and just be careful. But now you've created this atmosphere where you care more that you've done everything on the list than the fact that you might actually fuck something up. And then if something does go wrong, you have no idea what to do, because your checklist has gone out the window. Instead of just reacting to the immediate danger and being constantly aware that it's there, you've created this shield. And then when the shield disappears, you're fucked, because you haven't, you know, prepared yourself to... you know, to figure things out as they happen. I think that's the biggest problem, is we're just creating a society of stupid people instead of careful and thoughtful and, you know, hardworking and intuitive people. It's just dumb, you know, just dumb rubrics and checklist followings and making sure that you don't deviate from that. And I think that's a big reason our society is headed downhill.
Yeah, well, maybe it's not though. I agree. I see, man, you could see that everywhere, right? I went to college, and college is exactly what you're describing, but just with the pen and a pad. A lot of kids will go, they'll graduate, and then there's nothing after, and they're like, "But I followed all the rules. I checked all the boxes. I said the socially acceptable words that you wanted me to say, professor, and there's nothing for me after." And yeah, but that's the reality of the world, and that's why I think maybe construction workers are more in touch with that, because like you were just saying, we could follow all these rules. And when something goes wrong, if you don't know how to improvise and get this job done, it's not going to get done. You have to know exactly what you're doing, and you have to be just completely aware. All these other rules that were written by administrators and, the people that I don't know, like the people that are writing get what are they called? The books that are like these motivational books that tell you the steps you need to do to
Oh yeah,
do X,
I know
Y,
what
Z.
you're talking about.
Yeah, they have their place, but it by like far far and wide they. It just doesn't work. There's no steps to success. And it kind of, I really do enjoy talking with you guys as much as I do. Like you, Clint, Jose, Cole, Toad, all these people that are, you're out there and you're doing this thing that is just, it's like wild. And you don't know what it could be. This could be absolutely nothing, or it could be life changing. But you're improvising and you're doing it yourself, and you're not, there is no rules. You're making it up as you go, and there's something commendable about that. Whereas, my job now, I've been there for 7 years. It's like a lot of the guys I work with, they're like, well, we just got to get to retirement age, and we could do, follow the rules, get to here, and we could retire off of this. And I'm like, I don't think that that's what life is about. I think life is about struggling stupidly and flailing, but kind of aiming yourself in a direction, failing more, and then getting up and aiming in that direction or whatever direction it'll take you, and seeing what you can make yourself. But if we just choose a safe decision, then we'll end up in today's society. But I, like I said, I don't think that I think that's what we see a lot, but I don't think that that's exactly where we're headed, because I've met too many impressive people just in this small sphere that we're in to be blackpilled on the future of what's going on here, especially youngins like you.
Yeah,
Give
I
me hope.
mean, I don't know. I mean, the youngins are the ones who haven't given me hope in the past, in the last like decade or so. Because I started working right out of high school, and I was just a go-getter. I got my license and started driving trucks, and then went and did line work, and I was a foreman by the time I was 19. And then I'd meet this guy who's like 26 at the time. And he's just like, "Holy shit, you're 19?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "How have you done all this stuff already?" It's like, "Well, I just, sort of went for it and started doing things." There's so many people who are millennials who are like living in their parents' basements, and before all this shit happened, like before COVID and everything, they just had no skills, they were in massive debt, and they had no desire to better themselves. And I don't know, like you're right, you do run into some young people that really give you hope. But I think what blackpilled me on society was mostly people, my age and a little bit older from seeing how fucking useless they were. So I hope you're right, but I don't know. I just don't share quite the same
Yeah.
optimism, I guess.
I guess I'm being a little romantic, but yeah, I think most of the people in my life that I do see, that's the case with them. They're kind of stagnant and unsure what to do. A lot of people, full of potential, but just not doing much with it. But then, well before I met you guys, I was in a MeWe chat for and this is like another left turn, but I'll come back. I was in a MeWe chat for Dave Smith's Part of the Problem, that once it got disbanded from Facebook, they went to MeWe, and Andrew, Popular Liberty, started it. That's how I met him, probably like 2 years ago or something. And in there, I met Drew Hancock, and I was like, oh, it's pretty cool. He was active in the chat, and he was like, I could tell he's a smart young man. Then he made that first video that he got recognized by Dave Smith and Michael Malice. They brought it up on one of their shows. and they retweeted and stuff. And from there, the kid just exploded. And I don't know what he was doing before, but I think he's like, I think he might be 21 now. Before he was maybe working in a bank or something, but you know, he was doing his thing. Now he works for Odyssey, and he's pretty like, he has a pretty good status there. And he's a bright, I mean, very, very smart kid where he's influential, I think, in the company. So, you know, there's 100 people that are doing nothing. And then you'll meet someone like that, like, and say, oh shit, look at this guy. You know, he's doing, I wish I was doing that when I was 21, but you know, we've taken different paths. So there are people like that out there, and it gives me hope. I hope my kids, will, you know, be something like that when the time comes. Yeah, they're out there. They're out there for sure. But did you hear about what happened with Odyssey today?
With Rumble or who was going after them?
Yeah. Some lawyer for Rumble, the CEO of Rumble, messaged the CEO of Odyssey or emailed them, and Odyssey made a joke on Twitter saying that it looks like their users are bots, because the average watch time on some of their videos were like 25 seconds or like a minute or something, like really short. So it looked like that. So Rumble basically said, hey, if you don't delete this tweet, we're going to sue you. And it is very interesting to see a free speech company go after somebody for freedom of speech. Yeah. Especially after all the stuff that Rumble's been doing, like absorbing locals or buying locals and then going public. Mm-hmm. There's so many red flags with this company now where it's just like, yeah, I hope conservatives don't fall for the old bait and switch, you know. It's just YouTube 2.0.
Yeah, well, it would be nothing new if conservatives fall for the bait and switch. That's kind of what they do traditionally. You know, we do have this society that seems to care more about the rules than living. You know, that's a pretty good way to put it, that you described it. Like, I mean, I know what you're talking about. I knew a ton of guys like that who just cared about getting to retirement and then sitting in a chair until they die. And it's like, oh, wow, that really sounds fun. You know, I want to be living my entire life. And then if I die on the way to retirement, you know, I was living while I died. I don't want to have this goal in the future that I might not even reach. I mean, that's stupid. Like, it's good to set goals, but it's good to be living while you're setting those goals and trying to reach them. You know, if it's just something you can't attain until you get to a certain point in your life, I don't know. I don't think that should be your end all be all. I think you should be focusing on the moment too. And that's kind of mentality of the COVIDiots is, you know, if we just do this, then we will reach this point where COVID doesn't exist anymore. And it's like, well, first of all, no, you're wrong. But second of all, even if that were true, like, why not live in the moment? Like, you're just going to sit in your house and eat bonbons until COVID just disappears. You know, it's just kind of interesting that that's a parallel line of thought, you know, with safety and following the rules and reaching a goal that literally describes the COVID regime, you know?
Yeah, that when I was making that example, I wasn't even thinking about COVID. I don't know how I wasn't thinking about COVID, but yeah, it's along the same exact line. It's scary. You know, I was going to say too, like those people that you're talking about, they're, I don't know, some people would describe them as like they're working to die, right? They're working to a point to die. Some of these people are already dead and they're just going, they're dead. They're going through the motions. And it's the same. It is the same exact thing with COVID. That's very interesting. You know, if I just 15 days, then you'll give me back my freedoms, right? If we just lock down a little bit, then you'll give me, if I wear this mask, then after a few, then you'll give me back my freedoms, right? And it's like, you're just a habitual rule follower. So all COVID is a magnifying glass. So if you were that rule follower before, this just showed how much of a rule follower you really are. You'll follow the dumbest rules, even when they contradict themselves right to your face. When Fauci tells you one thing and then the next day the other, and it's done numerous times, you still will follow the rules. And there's something to discover in that alone. But where was I going with that? Yeah, there's a So, like I was going to say, on the other side of that, you have the rule followers, and then the other side of that, you have the people with autonomy. And I feel like those people have really shined. Or I'm speaking for myself. In the last 2 years, I have come into my own in a way because of COVID. Whereas I could have shrank into the background and been a rule follower, but I decided not to and decided to follow a different path and do something different. I feel like that's growing into, I don't know what it's growing into, but it's growing into something. So really, COVID has defined a lot of people in the negative light and positive light.
Yeah, speaking of that, you're still in New York, right? You're still in New York City and things fucking suck there. What's that like?
It's terrible. Yeah, it's terrible. We're working on some real estate stuff, and I can't really talk about it publicly, but it's gotten a little hairy. Lawyers have gotten involved, and things have gotten pushed back. So yeah, it's been a mess, man. I mean, they just implemented some kind of mandate for kids 5 through 11 that they have to be vaccinated in order to do anything. And it's Dave Smith spoke about it today or the other day. It's just pressure on the parents, you know, like if the parents are unvaccinated and you know, not they're unsure about their kids, the kids will hassle them and because they want to go to the movies or whatever, you know, whatever they want to do. It's interesting that de Blasio is passing this in his last 2 weeks in office. I don't know if it'll stand. I don't know the demeanor of the next guy coming in. I've checked out of New York politics almost completely because I just think this place is, I think it's irredeemable. And even if it was redeemable, I still would wish the worst for it because it's just stupid all around. Like the way people live here, even if New York was New Hampshire or Florida, I mean, people are living on top of each other. There's nowhere to park your car.
Yeah.
It's just constant frustration. The weather is bad. You know, to me, there's nothing good about it. So I don't know what's going on here, and I look forward to the day where I leave and never come back.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking about, you know, the kind of the legislative class versus the people who actually have to get things done. I've noticed, you know, through the last few months on Twitter, you've been talking about that a lot, not so much at work, but just in life. Like you've got kind of the legislative libertarians almost, the people who have come up with the theory, but then you've got people who are actually trying to live it, and it doesn't always add up. Do you want to explain that a little bit? What has that always been that way, or is that something you've just noticed as New York has gotten more retarded, or?
With libertarians, you mean, or just in general? Like,
Just with libertarians, like just the frustration with people who sit behind a keyboard but don't actually live in an authoritarian hellhole like you do, and you're like, hey, I have kids and I, you know, I've got actual consequences here, so things are a little different for me. Has that always been a clash you've had, or has it just been as things have gotten progressively worse where you live?
I think it's been a clash I've had in a number of different fields. I feel like we kind of touched on the overlaps in life in general and the themes that are constantly playing in the background that maybe we're not aware of. But in college, I minored in music, and my main focus was was like music composition. So I would learn all the theory and especially guitar theory, like guitar scale, all this kind of stuff. And when you're writing a song, you can understand all the notes that belong in there and the notes that you can play around with, and you could write something that is good, but it's not quite interesting because it follows the rules. You went to school and your teacher told you this is the wrong answer, this is the correct answer. So I learned after a while that bending the rules or breaking the rules in some cases to make it a little bit more flavorful makes things more interesting and makes it something that I would want to do in reality. It's it the practice. That's what I would want to do, rather than listening to the same four money chords like any pop song that you hear on the radio. You know, 1, 4, 5 is the chord progression. I'm not interested in doing that. So When I see libertarians who adhere to theory completely, I respect them and I love that. And it breaks my heart to even call them lulberts or whatever it is, or even argue with them like in a malicious way, which I wouldn't have gone after people like that before. But I feel like this COVID thing, especially in New York, put a sense of urgency. It's really lit a fire under my ass where it's like, hey, I get what you're saying. I agree 100%. But this is what's happening now. You know, New York is they've been trying to pass legislation to build basically concentration camps for health reasons. And I read that, I don't know, a year and a half ago. And I was like, that's fucking crazy. Then you look at Australia and I look at Washington State and they're building that there now. And, yep. You know, Austria and Germany and places like this. And it's not so it's not so much a theory anymore. It's terrifying because it's like I'm looking at it. I'm in this place. I'm seeing it. And some of the arguments that the people who use strict theory use work against us in the immediate time, in the present. I understand. And you know, me and you have had our disagreements about this stuff. And I agree with you completely, Reed, where, you know, you'll say, well, if you allow DeSantis the power to find businesses that don't want to adhere or that do adhere to a vax mandate, then you're giving him this unmitigated power that in the future could be used against us. You're right. You're 100% right. But right now, they're forced vaccinating us to the point where, you know, if you don't want to, maybe they'll put you in a camp or maybe they'll just take your job, make you suffer. Who knows where the depravity ends? It probably doesn't. It doesn't stop. So I don't know where. I just don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. I'm glad that I've retained the friendships that I have with, you know, people like Ace and you and Drew and other people like that. Very smart people. It's just like I just disagree with what needs to be done right now. Mm-hmm. And
I just don't like the way you worded it, to adhere to a vax mandate, because like if the state passes a vax mandate, I am for overturning that and saying, no, fuck you, we're not going to do that. It's just if a coffee shop or something says, hey, we want our employees to be vaccinated just to be safe or whatever. You know, I think there's it's so, you know, we have such a mixture of corporation and state now. If a giant corporation decides to mandate vaccinations, I do think that's different than when a coffee shop just says, hey guys, like, you know, we're just really worried about this and we want you to be vaccinated if you're working here. And I don't really know.
What do you think about this though? I get what you're saying with that. And when it came to that DeSantis argument, I wasn't so much a fan of him finding these companies or like, you know, really hurting them or forcing people to do stuff. What I was a fan of is the rhetoric of it. You know,
yeah.
I don't want, if I'm going to be going to Florida or New Hampshire's doing it right now and they're doing a great job and they are kind of using legislation they're doing it with teachers where the teachers can be sued or fined or something. And it's just, it's like, great. Here's the rule that we want. And if you don't like it, get the fuck out of here. That's what they're doing to me in New York. They're like, these are the rules that we want. And that's why, you know, my friends are out there. They're like, oh, we're going to go to the march. We're going to march through the city about vaccines. Like, why? This is what this place wants. They've told you straight out they hate you. They don't want you here. Let them have it. But if you're going to go to another place, let's make that as free as possible. So if it takes the rhetoric, like, I don't know, like when Trump was president, he was saying, you know, no Mexicans can come here. And less Mexicans were trying to come. When Biden says it's okay, then you see what I mean? Even though the actual physical legislation probably is the same, the rhetoric has swayed how people think. So I'm a big fan of that. Like, just say crazy shit and let the people on the left or whatever, the, you know, liberal mindset people say, I don't like that, and they'll leave. That's kind of a Hoppian tactic, I think, if you want to create some kind of community with cohesiveness. So, yeah. I get what you're saying. I'm not a fan of, you know, government action, but I I'm a fan of this Machiavellian tactic. I think I think it's fun and a little sneaky.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with you on the rhetoric thing. Like, I mean, I think most leftists would not. I mean, there's some leftists who like me who aren't woke pieces of shit. But for, you know, that, like, what you're talking about, that, like, ridiculous left-wing culture, I think it's cancer. And no one would associate with me who is from that just because of the things I say and the way I act. And, you know, I had Jeremy Kaufman on the show, and we were talking about this with New Hampshire, and he was against, like, legislating against vaccine, you know, vaccine requirements for businesses if they want to do it. But he was saying, like, we need to cultivate a liberty culture that discourages people from wanting to be here. And that's something I completely agree with. Like, if you are an authoritarian, then I want to be as repulsive to you as possible. Yeah. And I think that that does piss off a certain strain of, like, Cato libertarians. And I think this whole conversation on Twitter, I mean, Twitter sucks for this type of conversation anyway, but I feel like the lines are kind of muddied. You know, the waters are all really unclear and people are arguing past each other, because you'll have somebody who is like Archie Flowers, who's making these absolutely retarded arguments. Then you have someone like Drew Hancock, who's definitely not in the same vein at all. But people will group them together. And then they'll have people like you, who I don't really, I mean, everything you've said on here, I don't really disagree with. But then they'll group you in with some dumbass, like, paleo conservative right winger who hates, you know, any dissent from his lifestyle or whatever. Like, I don't know. I think that the, you know, the nuance is just lost, I guess.
Yeah, it you know what, if I was a slightly dumber person, I would actually start to move towards the people who they're accusing me of being of, but right. I just pay no mind and just fucking go do a drawing or something. But one of the other things that I had an issue with was the nap. I know you saw that whole kind of back and forth that I think even Bob Murphy threw some jabs in at me. The more cohesive explanation of what I'm saying is if I'm gonna be in a fight with somebody, and it's a foregone conclusion that this person has intent on doing me harm, and I tell him or her, this is as far as I'm willing to go and no further, so that means that they can come right up to that line every time and maybe even and push me back from that line and just get their way little by little. So I mean, adhere to the nap. I do it in my life every day. I don't want to fight people. I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to take your stuff. But I think it's a good idea to not tell people what my intentions are. Because once I tell you exactly what I'll allow you to do, you're going to do it. It's human nature. So whether it be the state or, I don't know, the Delaware people, like what Pete said with the people in New Hampshire, where he said go back and take it, and libertarians were, he said go back armed and take your party, and libertarians were like, whoa, the nap of, like, hey, I'm not saying to do it, but
yeah.
Yeah, don't, maybe don't do it, it's probably a bad idea, but leave it on the table, maybe. Yeah. your yeah, turn, you decide.
The way you described it on Twitter that I thought was good was you said you were sick of the cowardly interpretation of the non-aggression principle. So you don't like it when people present it in a way that is nothing but surrender and nothing but letting your enemies destroy you, which I agree with. I mean, Clint and I were in a room at Freedom Fest where Nick Sarwark was saying theft. No, what did he say? I think he said theft doesn't violate the NAP. And we were like, what? And the way this had started is Larry Sharp and a few other guys were in there, and one of the guys in there was saying that someone stole his computer and he saw which car it was in or something. So he went over and bashed the window out and then was holding his tire iron over his head, screaming at the guy, like, give me my stuff back. And he said, I realize I broke the NAP. And then Larry Sharp was like, wait a second. You think you broke the NAP there? How? He stole your property and you were getting it back. And he said, I want to ask everyone in this room, how many of you think he actually broke the NAP? And nobody raised their hand except Nick Sarwark. And then Nick Sarwark was explaining how theft didn't violate the NAP. And everybody in the room disagreed with him. So I think that there's a minority that is doing this. And I agree with you. It's really bad because I think it's a dishonest misinterpretation of what the NAP means. I mean, I think if, you know, there were, I might get the channel nuked for this, but if there were a January 6th style movement that was actually successful just to overturn the government, I do not think that would violate the non-aggression principle. I think that the state has been violating our rights for over a century, you know, almost like over two centuries. So if we decide that we want to overthrow it, I think that's completely within our right. And it's not an aggressive move in the, you know, in the light of aggression. I think it's a self-defense move. And I guess different people would apply it in different areas. You know, they'd bring it to different extremes, but I'm pretty extreme with it. Like, I think if you steal something from me, you know, you are putting your life on the line. Like, if you are willing to come onto my property and try to take something, you know, you are forfeiting your right to live. And I can, you know, like, and I probably wouldn't shoot somebody if they were just on my property. I mean, if it was just something, you know, not serious or whatever. But if you break into my house at night and I don't know what's going on, like, I'm going to defend myself. And I do not think that that's an unnecessary, unequal use of force. Like, if you come into my castle when I'm sleeping and I don't know what you're up to, I'm going to use, you know, excessive force to repel you and get you out of there. I'm not a police officer who is willingly putting my life on the line to maintain order, who's trained to de-escalate situations. You are breaking into my house in the night, and I am going to defend myself. So I think that you're right. There are people who use it to basically create this cowardly, limp-wristed defeat, you know, defeatism, and that's wrong. I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah, and the line gets blurred between those types and the other types who are making the argument in good faith. It's also kind of funny, the people who are using this, who are making the NAP cowardly and limp-wristed are actually cowardly and limp-wristed. Like, how funny would it have been as Nick Starworks defending theft that somebody just came and said, "Yo, run your pockets, bitch." Just, yeah, like, robbed them right there. Like, all right, fair is fair, right? I don't know, my parents and a couple of people in New York, even if you're a legal gun owner and you do everything right, someone breaks into your house and stuff, like, if you shoot them, you're probably going to jail. They're going to throw they'll throw the book at me, but I've got kids here. So I've said it multiple times. It's like, you know, we could fall back on theory and all this stuff, but I'm just going to apply praxis here and I'll deal with what happens later. You know, don't come in my house. Don't do this kind of wacky shit. And this goes all the way down the line to large government action. I think we just have to act rationally in your own best interest, which, and I'll bring it to kind of full circle back. We were talking about the OSHA and rules and the workers that kind of cut corners. They're working in their own self-interest. Tell them the rules, tell them how to get things done safely, but let them make this decision on their own on how to do it. And, you know, you have a group of guys too. They're all going to decide this is the best way to do it. These things are frivolous and stupid. Let's go right to the point. Let's get this done. Let's go home safe and get some money. So let them have autonomy. That's what's a lot of is missing in this world. But give these people autonomy. Give them the right to choose their own actions. And you see how it plays out. I'm pretty sure it would play out a lot better. Things would be cheaper, done faster, and maybe even safer.
Let's switch gears here a little bit. I'm actually, I don't know if I still am. It's been a long time since I've tried, but I used to be somewhat of an artist back when I was in high school. And then really after I got out of high school, I stopped drawing, but I did a lot of portraits like you. And I got pretty good at it. Haven't done it in a long time, but, what got you into drawing? How old were you? And was it just a natural, skill you had, or did you have to work at it really hard, or how did that come to be?
So drawing and music and some sports and stuff, this kind of like runs in my family. So I guess I was always good at drawing. I wasn't as good as some of my other cousins. Did you see the picture of me as like a lobster and like screaming and tentacles come out of my mouth. Yeah. I hired my cousin to do that.
Oh, he really?
Just, yeah, yeah. So he doesn't do graphic stuff, but he sketched it up and then I inked it on the tablet and everything, and it's just fantastic. And I've been drawing with him my whole life. We were drawing comics when we were 3 years old, 4 years old, just fucking around and drawing. I went to junior high school for art talent, and I really liked that. But like you said, like I like to focus on like the human form, the face. I love drawing faces because everyone's face is unique, and depending on the angle and the lighting, it could really be, you know, beautiful or horrific. I mean, if I'm drawing Reed, it'll probably be horrific. And
well, if it's accurate, it'll be horrific at least. You know?
Yeah, the zombie Reed. Where is he at? Over here. Actually, you're looking pretty sexy over here.
That's horny Reed. Zombie Reed.
Every time I meet Reed in real life, he looks like this horny Reed. Very strange.
Yeah, I'm just looking. Yeah.
So yeah, I always like to draw, and it was something that I did, and then I kind of put that talent away for a little while, and I was doing some other stuff, and recently, probably before the pandemic, I started to do merch for my job. The guys wanted like shirts with like, I don't know, the company name or like different positions that guys did maybe on the tracks and stuff. So I started to doodle with that, and you know, here I am now, all the way down this road, partnering with you guys with the Tower Power Hour shop that hosts everyone.
Kind of, yeah, I wanted to show some of that. So I finally actually have. Let's see if I can pull this off. I'm really bad at this type of stuff. There we go. I've actually got merchandise on toplobster.com now. So you guys, is that showing up on the screen right now?
Yeah, I see it.
All right, good. Yeah, so you can, you know, get whatever you want and get different style hoodies, different style shirts. So yeah, go check it out. It's pretty cool. I'm buying a bunch of stuff for my family for Christmas. I think you were saying today is the last day you can buy stuff and it'll show up.
Yeah, well, that's what they said. I mean, I can try to get them to get it out the door sooner, but yeah, it's, you know, during Christmas time it gets real busy, and then with some supply chain shortages, things get a little hairy. So yeah, I would do it as soon as possible. Actually, today I was working on some of the stickers. So I have stickers ready for your store. I have some for Clint, I have some for Josh. So they're on the back end of the site, and I just haven't had time to publish the stuff. But either by tonight or tomorrow morning, the stickers will be ready. So we're making it like real legit, and it's going to be a one-stop shop where you can go get all of your you know, your favorites. You can get the number one and number two Liberty Truck Driver merch right there.
Yeah, and the link is in the description of that. Also, where you can follow him on Twitter and follow all my stuff, but the link to toplobster.com is right there, and then I think right below it I have the link to my specific page on there. But yeah, we were talking, I don't know, we talked what, like a month and a half ago. I was like, hey man, I gotta get some merch, like I'm kind of lagging behind, like there are people with smaller shows than me who have merch already, that's not cool. And then we've both been really busy, but we finally got it going, so go check it out.
Every week I'm like, hey Reed, did you set up the store? Because I was trying to get you to set it up like on your own. And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna do it when I get back from New Hampshire. I'm gonna do it. So I was like, you know what? Do you want me to just do it? Like, yeah, fucking do it, man. So this works out okay.
You ended up doing it for all of us. You're kind of running the store, and we all just have our page on there. It works out pretty well.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, if you guys like the shows, you like the Natural Skillist, No Way Jose, Tower Power Hour, Liberty Lockdown, go ahead and buy some stuff. It seems like what they're working on is if the sales are good, they'll use this money to just put it right back into the shows. So maybe advertising, grow the show, and you know, if you like what Reed's doing and everyone else, just support them, and you'll get some real cool shit too. It's like, you know, good quality and really nice stuff. I have to remake the shirt because rest in peace, Nick isn't with us anymore.
We'll have to add you or something because you're just like, you know, you're our sponsor and you're on the show kind of regularly, or I don't know about regularly, but you're on pretty often now compared to before.
Yeah, I'll pop if you guys ask me, I'll pop in if I'm not busy. I love that show, man. It's gonna be I'm so happy that you guys let me like sort of get in on it early before it's gonna be too huge, you know?
And I was lucky. I mean, I joined it when there was like 40 subscribers or something, and then it just happened to take off. And man, that is the funniest thing ever. We all talk about this. It's just like all we do is start the camera rolling and then just act retarded. That's literally all we do. I mean, there's no like planning to it at all. It's just like, who are we gonna have on? Okay, this guy, what should we talk about? I don't know, fuck it, let's just roll the camera. And then it's
the
just
one
blown up the way it has. It's amazing.
There's been like two times maybe where, or three times where you guys have played games and that was pre-planned, and I'm in the chat for this, so I see it, and they're like, oh, we're going to play, what's the one with the, I forgot, whatever, but I'm like, I literally made like, I'll make like a promo for you guys and I'll get it to you at 9 o'clock, and then Total finish the game or what he thinks you guys should do at like 9:05, and then 9:15 or 9:11 you guys are on. So there's really no planning, or you guys are just flying by the seat of your pants and it comes out beautiful every time.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, with that show, and I'll speak for myself with my show, like I never watched any videos on how to do a successful podcast or like what type of equipment you should buy. I just started fucking doing it, and then it just kind of blew up, and then Tower Power Hour is the same way. And this kind of goes into what we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast about following the rules versus actually having passion in what you do and making it interesting. And you've got to know some of the rules. Like, I mean, if you have absolutely terrible audio, you're always an hour late and your video is really shitty or whatever, like, yeah, I mean, that'll suck and it'll hurt your views. But I mean, there's a balance. Like, you've got to be, it's got to be more about the content and about the fire behind it. And that's what actually gets people interesting. I know you've met my dad. He's an English teacher. And he was one of the people who inspired me to be that way, because you have so many English teachers that are like, you need your introductory sentence and then your three supporting sentences and then your conclusion sentence. And that is a solid paragraph. And I don't know if you've seen the movie Dead Poets Society, but that movie describes my dad, basically. He was just like, no, like, I don't care. You have to know the rules so you know how to write, but then you're supposed to leave the rules behind at a certain point,
exactly.
You know, and go beyond the rules. And that's what actually will give you a successful paper, a successful story, a successful book, or a successful life or podcast or work experience or whatever. You know, it's all about like learning the boundaries so that you can go beyond them eventually.
Yeah, you know, I will say, I don't want to brag about my art, but I noticed a couple months ago, I was like, oh, this is why, like, I think when people see my art, they could tell it right away. They're like, oh, that looks like a top lobster, maybe because of the colors I use, but a lot of it is the technique that I'm using. So I use a program that runs off of vectors. Most of the artwork that I do is all vectors, which is just points on a graph, and you're kind of like making lines and shapes and stuff. But in my experience so far, I've looked at other people that do portrait vectors, and none of them look the way I do, because I'm using a technique that I guess only I use. Like, it's borderline stupid. It takes more time than what they're doing. But what they're doing is like if you go on YouTube and look up a vector tutorial about how to draw a portrait, and you'll see at the very end, you'll see what the portrait looks like. It doesn't look like my stuff, because I'm just doing like, I learned that and I understood it, and then I was like, but it's not quite what I want to do, so I'm just gonna make it up as I go. And that's just kind of how I did it. So I was like, I know those rules, I'm not gonna follow them right now, because they're not producing what I think I want. And now I have something distinct that maybe in a few years I'll outgrow. But yeah, it's again, you know, just learning the rules and then doing your own thing with them and expanding from there. So like anything in life.
Well, you might not like bragging about your artwork, but I think it deserves bragging. It's pretty good. It's really, I mean, you've kind of brought an element to the Liberty movement that we didn't know we needed. And now that it's here, if something happened to you and you were gone, it would be the worst thing ever. You know, like, everyone's doing. What's that?
Oh no, go ahead. Go finish that.
you know, everyone's doing a podcast or running for office or doing debates or something. And what you do is just like a whole different level that kind of brings us together and gives us unity. There you go. I know you hate that, but you kind of do. You're a uniting figure in the Liberty Movement.
Yeah, it is weird because I feel like if my wife would tell you, my personality is polarizing, and like the things that I say, like I'm very much like, not this is what I think. But people that will like hate you guys, like Tower Power Hour, and you know, the types that'll say crazy shit, I'm saying crazy shit with you, I'm on the show, but they like me. I don't know, maybe because of the artwork, maybe it's that bridge that kind of does unite. I'm not interested in the unity, guys, but if you like the artwork, fine, I guess. No, I'm joking. Well, I love all you guys.
I love you, brother. It's been great getting to know you, and it's been fun taking jabs at each other on Twitter. And I'm sure our friendship will last for years. But is there anything else you want to add, or anything else you want to plug before we kill the show?
I'm just kind of sad that maybe this episode, people watching it will get the idea that we're breaking kayfabe. This is completely fake. Before the show started, I told Reed, I was like, listen, just put on a fucking smile, you douchebag, and we're just going to act like we like each other. We're going to talk civilly. And once this is over, just back to business as usual. This is for the likes, and, well, you don't see any dislikes on YouTube anymore, and this is for the views, completely for the views. Once this is over, I'm not even going to say bye. I'm hanging up and fuck this guy. So that's the truth of the matter.
A Christmas season ceasefire, like they had in World War I, where they came out of the trenches and, you know, party for a day. That's what we're doing in the season of Christmas. We're calling a truce. But hey, man, it was great having you on. I think you know, a lot of people don't realize what an interesting person you are, just because they just know your artwork. But I really like the way you think, and I'd love to have another conversation in the future.
Thanks, brother.